Welcome to Calibrate Conversations, a podcast about embracing God's standard for sexuality. I'm your host, Brady Cohn, and joining us today is our special guest, Nathan Sutherland. How's it going today, Nathan?
It's going well. I'm excited to be here, Brady.
Yes, here on the Created Donkey Farm. So
it feels amazing.
Maybe a little more than you bargained for.
Those Dachshunds are adorable.
Yes, they're pretty cool. Yeah. So, Nathan, you have a really great ministry called Gospel Tech. And so we want to talk about that today. You're married to Anna, and you have three kids at home. So tell us a little bit about your life.
All right. I'll start with the kids. So three humans, Owen, Henry, Hadley. They're 11, 9, and 6 right now. So I'm in the thick of figuring out how to raise kids well in a tech world. And that's a passion of mine. I was a middle school teacher for a decade, and that gave me a passion for seeing kids reach their potential. I saw so many kids where I would believe in them more than they would, and then they would break through this seeming impossibility. I can't read, or I can't understand it, so I can't apply the skill. And watching that light come on was an absolute motivator for me. And then the Lord led me to a Young Life, and I got to sharing the gospel, and I was like, oh, that light can apply, but to like identity and to whose you are, not just who you want to be when you grow up. Like, who are you today? And that led me to start a nonprofit, and now I specifically work with how do we take the gospel, the good news that God saves sinners, makes them saints, and then applies them to good works, Ephesians 2:10 tells us. So what does that look like, both for the parents, teachers, mentors, but then directly with young people, to talk about using the best tech well and using all the tech that makes us look more like Jesus? So that's kind of the ministry of Gospel Tech. And then Anna has been an amazing support in this. She is an excellent writer. She wrote a book, a devotional for moms on how to keep your eyes on Jesus. Oh, wow. That is amazing tech world called The Graceful Disconnect. And yeah, she's an amazing coworker, but also she's the organized one. So somehow she carries the brunt of the, you know, she's married to a golden retriever ADD person. So
yes, behind every great ministry is a wonderful wife that, I mean, carries the load of so many things.
Very bright, incredibly talented. And the Lord has gifted her with a passion for this work as well. And obviously, for seeing our kids raised well in tech world. So yeah, that's in a nutshell what we're doing and how
that's great. When I first met you, I came home full mirrors. Like, I think he's like my opposite in every way. And it's like, he's so disciplined in so many things he does. And he loves middle schoolers.
Yeah.
It's like, and that's really not very common for people to love middle schoolers, but you spent years investing in them as a teacher, and you saw how they can have, you know, great potential, and you want them to achieve that. And now you're have this whole ministry where it's really the families, you know, walk alongside parents so they can help their kids have the best potential and learn to navigate this world around us.
Yeah. And that's absolutely it. It was initially prayerfully going, okay, Lord, we're going to keep fishing for young people, and then realize like, oh, we're so limited. Like, if I was 22, that might work, but finite older Nathan realized like, oh, we were talking about this earlier. Like, if I go and do, you know, a weekend of workshops, like, that's going to burn me out. Like, I have a very finite number of times I can do that. So how do we replicate? Like, the best way is get in front of parents, pastors, teachers, mentors who already care about kids, and give them the words to go with the compassion and the conviction the Lord's already given them. And now we're equipping them to go and do that good work, discipling and raising. And it doesn't all come back to me. Like, it's at some point, someone will forget my name and that I exist, that a ministry is a thing. It's like, awesome. Yeah. It's like, remember
this. That parent who's equipped will have an impact for generations.
Yeah, exactly right. So that's really become the goal. Is it's not, how do we get this ministry to be bigger or get me in front of more people? It's really, how do we make it so that this conversation of healthy tech and connecting the gospel to it is so ubiquitous that people both forget about us and then like don't need it? Like, if we were to try to present, like, oh, but we already know this. Like, we know this conversation on how to assess and apply it. I'm like, awesome. Like,
that's great.
Beautiful. Yes. Yeah. That's our long term.
Why not work yourself out of a job?
It'd be amazing.
It'd be great if you're no longer needed. So
it'd be awesome. Yeah. Right? It's like, yes.
I would love that if I no longer was needed. So, but
wouldn't that be incredible?
See, everyone will tell you time soon.
Totally understand. I mean, just think of the last 5 years where this conversation has come as a country in terms of identity and gender and what it looks like to be healthy. There's absolutely still touch points, and there's still confusion, there's still false dichotomies, but the conversation of like, you know what, like whose I am as a Christian determines my identity, and then I send from that to my conversations on what's going on inside my heart and what feels real. Like, that's different than when, well, the 90s,
Yeah, we're right. We don't talk about this. It's not real.
No one's going to deal with it. And so I think there may come a day, man. Lord will it.
There may come a day where you have to come for, we'll have to make a new ministry and start dealing with another way.
Yes. Every generation has something that they struggle with.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that your ministry is amazing because I see so many people affected by technology, social media. So many of the kids in our parents' ministry, you know, their kids were influenced by social media, and now they're identifying as transgender, non-binary. So many things have deeply, deeply affected their life. And really, what we've seen is that the authority in this child's life has been taken by social media. They are withdrawing from their parents' authority in their life and giving their authority to social media. And so that's why I'm passionate about it. And that's why I believe that this conversation is so important on a podcast that talks about sexuality issues, because technology is affecting our kids in such deep ways. But I don't want parents to live in fear. I want us to use it well, as is your heart and what you train them to do. So let's dig into technology, social media. How is it affecting our society negatively? Our kids negatively? And I don't want to just be a Debbie Downer. We're going to get to the hopeful part of how can we use it for good and how can we shepherd our kids. We don't want parents to just live in fear. We want them to feel equipped and empowered to do this well.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to nerd a little bit on that because that was a nice broad session, and that gives me a broad answer opportunity. But you go, social media is where we'll start, because that's where we're seeing a majority of the research is showing us clarity in a causal link between engaging in social media and teen brains and a decline in mental health quality. So we go back to 2010 and the invention of a like button. And this is the first time in human history where we've been able to add a qualitative and a quantitative value to things that previously were immeasurable, like pictures of food. Previously, if you took a picture of food and I took a picture of food, we just had two pictures of food.
Yes.
And even pre-2010, we posted on the internet for whatever we do, MySpace or early Facebook or something. It's just going to be a picture of food. People might comment on it, but like, that's it. It's just people, you know, talking about your food. And it was very odd. And then the like button comes along, and let's say you get 50 likes and I get 5. Well, you're now 10 times more valuable. And because we now know that, we can both see who liked it and push information their way, but we can also go ad revenue and we can get traction with other sites and we'd get you sponsorships. And like, we can bump you up in terms of pictures of food standings, which now makes you influential. Hmm. You'll have young people who say, well, I want to be an influencer when I grow up. And you ask, well, what do you want to influence people in or for? And they will stare at you like a cow looking at a new gate, because that's not their goal. Their goal is just to have people listen to them. Doesn't matter how much. And that's thanks to the like button. So starting in 2011, what we see, so Jonathan Haidt in his book, The Anxious Generation, does a beautiful job tracking this. Starting in 2011, we start to see this kind of bump in anxiety and in loneliness with young people. And it continues to 2024, which is the last kind of set of data that we have. But we have young people increasingly anxious, increasingly lonely, increasingly depressed. We have a 2017 study by Twenge et al. Out of San Diego State University that says, hey, starting at 2 hours a day of social media use, she's actually broader. It's basically entertainment tech use. It's just general internet-connected escapism. 2 hours a day, you're 22% more likely to experience depression or suicidal ideation. Goes up to 8 hours or 5 hours a day, you're more than 60% more likely than your non-using peers. And that goes all the way into, like, we saw a 2023 study from the CDC that looked at 2022 data that was produced in 2021. So if you can track with me, they're saying in 2021, we had just under two-thirds, it was 58% of American teenage girls suffered from prolonged bouts of sadness and loneliness. Boys were our good stat, and it was 1 in 3 suffered from prolonged bouts of sadness and loneliness. These are the most connected kids we've ever had, the most educated, the most free. These are the wealthiest young people we've ever seen in the history of humanity. And they are also the saddest, the most likely to attempt their own lives, the most lonely. These are from self-reported studies. And we're tracing that back to the beginning of it starting in 2011. when manipulated technology began training young people to need technology rather than just to use it. So we're not conspiracy theory about this. The two phrases I like to use for tech is there's two kinds. There's tool tech that helps us create, drool tech that helps us consume, and consumption tech, tech that wants to take your time, focus, and money, is built around the premise that you can be trained like a rat in a lab, like Hebbian theory of learning, like the neurons that fire together, wire together, is something you do a lot, you get good at doing. And that includes if I send you a notification and that sends you to social media and that sends you to a variable reward, like a comment or like, or just a piece of news that you enjoy or really hate, that's variable. Now you're invested and you're more likely to repeat this every time the notification comes or you feel anxious or you feel bored. So starting in 2010, we got a like button that produced behavioral design so that we can nudge you towards a choice that you didn't want to make, which is what a notification is. You wanted to make it, I wouldn't have to notify you, but you don't want to make it. And so I'm notifying you that that brand you haven't talked to in 20 years is here. Stop having dinner with your family. Pay attention to this app. You now pay attention to that app and you've done one loop of getting a reward and now you're that much more invested. So young people are becoming invested, not necessarily because it's a product they want, but it's a product that they're convinced they need. Can I give you a quick, and this, can I dive a little deeper?
Oh,
can I go further down the holes? All right. Case in point, Snapchat. Snapchat is a feature, an app that nobody asked for. No one was using Instagram and was like, oh, I love like a privacy of using an app, but like, you know, the intimacy of direct messaging a friend. Like, I love that feature. It's like text, but there's just so much more to it. I just wish there was a timer. Like, I just wish that when I went to direct message a friend and they direct message me back, like a 24-hour clock started. And I have to do this every 24 hours now for our friendship to survive or they'll hate me forever. And that is Snapstreaks. You ask anyone who uses Snapchat to use Streaks. 9 out of 10 will have streaks with people. And you ask any of them, have you ever kept a streak alive when you were supposed to be eating, sleeping, hanging out with people or stubby? 100% of Snapstreak users will say, yeah, like I've kept a Snapstreak alive when I was supposed to be eating, sleeping, hanging out with people or studying. Well, that those four are Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yes.
Like you need sleep to survive. You need food to survive. You need friends to survive, and you need a purpose. You need to know you have a future. I mean, this is the whole thing in Man's Search for Meaning. The concept that he's digging into in this book is, so Man's Search for Meaning follows a man who is a psychiatrist who was put into 3 Nazi concentration camps as a Jewish psychiatrist. And he basically, while he's there, takes notes on like, what is happening to people in suffering? He's like, there's 3 reasons why you'll die in a concentration camp: brutality, exposure, and a lack of purpose. And this is where the Man's Search for Meaning comes in. He's like, you would see people who would start smoking your cigarettes with their currency. He's like, the only reason you would smoke your currency is if you didn't think you would need it. He's like, 100% of the time, within 48 hours, that person's dead. Not because anyone's killed them, but because they quit. You have to know that you have a reason for today and a purpose for tomorrow. And as soon as you believe you don't, you give up. Your body will just shut down. We have young people who are like, I'm taking a product I never asked for, Snapstreaks. I am choosing to use it over things I need to survive, my friends, or my relationships, my meals, my sleep, and my future, my studies, the things that are going to open doors for me. I'm now choosing things I want over things I need. And that's textbook addiction. As soon as you're taking things that you want over things that you need for survival, like, wow, that's the definition of addiction. And it's not by accident. It's very intentional design. And it's very manipulative to the point where I was given this conversation here in Washington State. I had a 6th grader walk up to me and she leads with, I stole from my grandparents. And I was like, I don't think I'm the person to tell the that related. She's like, no, like I had a streak going with a friend and then the streak expired because I slept through it. And I was really upset because she was going to be really mad at me. And Snap reached out and they basically said that if I paid them money, they would give me my streak. But oh, wow. She didn't have the money. So she took it from her grandparents. And I was like, so let me get this straight. You have a friend that you're so afraid of, you would rather steal from the people that house and feed you.
Yes.
I was like, maybe we need a conversation about what friends are.
Something as silly as a Snapchat streak.
But the streak is so real and the social weight is so heavy for these kids. Like, ask anyone who's had a streak expire after a meaningful amount of time. All of them will find it distressing.
Wow.
I've talked to 2 different SROs and student resource officers, the police officers that are in schools, who both say, by the way, that 9 out of 10 of their calls have to do with social media and the internet. So they're like, we don't really show up for situations that aren't stemming from the internet.
be that what it, take that for what it's worth. But both of them have said they've arrested young people who have committed crimes worthy of being arrested. And those young people asked for the opportunity to pass off their phone, not to hide information, but to keep their streaks alive. Like, that's the way. Like,
wow.
You're going to jail.
Wow.
And you're concerned about your
streaks. That is insanity.
So as we're talking about the weight of young people and being manipulated by technology, we're talking about billion-dollar companies, sometimes trillion-dollar companies that are really, really good at behavioral design, that understand the idea of operant conditioning, that we can train a rat to press a lever on command with reward and punishment, and we can train a person to do the same. We'll reward you with another day on your streak and that good feeling of having all these people writing you every day, or we'll punish you with the expiration of this streak, but we'll let you pay us money so nobody knows. I'm just going to, I'll postulate, I'll throw this out there, that if you produce a product for miners, and then you withhold that product from them in exchange for more money, that's not a product, that's extortion. And that you are manipulating developing brains as a profit model. And that is wrong. Someone who's a little less toxic in the way they do it, but most families will identify with this, is Duolingo. My children have been using Duolingo, so it's a language app. They wanted to practice Spanish. I said, sure, that's great. We use guided access so you can lock it in. It's just that they can't follow ads out. They can't leave this. They got 15 minutes. So 15 minutes goes by, but Duolingo will reach out to, well, did you know you're only 50 points away from Emerald Lake? So another 50 points, you can get up.
Here's a reward. They're dangling
reward. So give me another 5 minutes. They go, yeah, sure. It's a goal I want to meet. I'm already 15 minutes in. What's 5 more minutes? And it's not bad to spend 5 more minutes learning a language. That's a goal you had, except you didn't plan on spending 5 more minutes. In fact, you planned on 15. You just gave them 33% more time because they told you to. Or the reverse of, oh, you're going to get bumped down a league. You better give us 5 more minutes or you're going to get this negative repercussion again. It's the carrot, the stick, it's the lever, or it's the treat, or the electrified floor of the operant conditioning example. That Duolingo behavioral loop will then cause my child to come to me and say, Dad, you're being mean. I'm upset with you because you won't give me these 5 minutes. Like, yeah, but before you got on, we agreed. 15 minutes. You're good with that? Yes, I'm good with that. No, I'm not good with that. And you're bad, Dad, because tech told me I need 5 more minutes. Like, that's unfair to a developing brain. And that's where we see a lot of the conflicts come up. Very few parents are having fights about tool tech. There's not a lot of kids who are like, Mom, I need 5 more minutes on Microsoft Word. Like, it does happen, especially in the middle of a project, but it's not the technology's fault. Microsoft Word isn't behaviorally.
They're not enticing marketing, trying to manipulate you to, you know, write your paper and do things that are actually creative.
Right. It's not trying to take your time or your focus or your money. And the way that breaks out is time, they want more, but focus is they want it more often. And money is, okay, if can't get either of those, just pay us, right? Snapchat. If I can't get you to show up for a streak, I can at least extort a little more money out of you at the end of the day. That's all the same to me because you covered what the usage would have been. So, that is when we talk about why is it so tricky with young people? How can this be so unhealthy? Starts with the like button. It proves that behavioral manipulation is a thing and that we can make technology to convince young people specifically that they need things they never wanted. So that they're so...
I'm guilty of that in my own life. When I went to your seminar, it's like, oh gosh, I need to make some changes in my life because I'm being so manipulative and I'm giving up the things I need to survive. It's like, you know, each day that I don't work out, it's like, because I don't have time or energy or whatever, it's like, well, I'm still on social media that day. So it's like, I'm making a choice to give up what I need for something that I want.
Yeah. And that is, I think, for all of us. And for adults, again, we have a frontal cortex. So the brain has a part of it that is dedicated to inhibition. And inhibiting thoughts of like, I should go, you know, eat all the candy in the pantry right now. Like, no, like you shouldn't. You have goals and you're doing something else and that'll make you sleepy when you crash from your sugar high. Like, oh yeah, that's right. Maybe I'll just have it for dessert. Young people don't have that. That's why we don't let them have free access to candy up till a certain age, because they'll make the easy choice. Like, there's lots of studies done on, you know, trying to get a first grader to be like, here's one cookie, or you can have two cookies if you just wait 5 minutes. Majority of those children choose the one cookie. A few will wait, but that they're anomalies.
by and large. And that's what we're talking about with this technology, is it is a digital cookie that it promises to make them feel good and to distract them and make all their bad stuff go away if only they click this button. And that's very hard for them to inhibit because they don't even have the hardware. So like, yeah, you and I see that. I see the same thing with like my quiet times. Like, oh, I didn't have time for a quiet time today. Like, check my screen time. There's a good chance there's somewhere in there. But by the time, like, have you ever been? So let's say you're, let me not say you. I will get stressed or anxious. I can't figure this out right now. I'm like, all right, I don't want to get up from my desk, but I do want to think about something else. So I'll jump on YouTube. Like, I'm just going to spend 5 minutes watching cycling videos on YouTube or just do something to, like, just try to clear my head.
Then this whole rabbit trail, you know.
And now it's a rabbit trail, and now I'm overstimulated and like, oh, I could go on a walk or like read scripture, but like my brain is in hyper animated, like stressed out mode. Like, sitting down for scripture is now really not in the cards for me. Like, it can happen, but it would have been better if I'd started with that. And I think that's what we're trying to do with technology, is give our children the best things first. Understand the rest of it exists and help them recognize where this is helpful or not. So Duolingo for us, we still use it. And I just use every time it becomes a fight as a loving conversation on, do you see that? Do you see how you're mad at me right now? Like, I love you and I'm going to give you good things. And I believe this could be one. And like, we had an agreement. We know this could be positive. And that's technology talking, not you. Like, yes, you're being tricked. So when it comes to mental health in young people, specifically what we saw with the CDC study or Jean Twenge, our goal is to help our young people understand if they're healthy, help them see where tech can be manipulative, and then help them use what I like to call all the best tech well. Tech that's safe, tech that they're ready for, and tech that produces good fruit. And when those three are happening, then sometimes that includes the best rule tech. It might be video games or social media or video game social media streaming services. They might have shows that they enjoy, and those could be really cool and life-giving. And it helps us go, oh, you know what? I'm not just an old person who's like, get off my lawn. Like, this is problematic.
Yes.
Do you see it? And if you do, what can we do? And if you don't, what do I need to do? Like, if you don't think this is a problem and I can very clearly see it impacting your life, like, I'm going to lovingly remove it and replace it with something else. That's great, because I don't hate you and I want you to have joy and absolute life and freedom, specifically the freedom to be all God's called you to see.
And you know, I think that when it comes to parenting, it's like when we see that something is causing so much harm, why do we keep doing it? Like,
yeah.
Why are like just that we have enough data, we have enough, we're seeing the results. I think there's time when it came from, you know, ignorance. I remember when I was, you know, I was like about 13 when I discovered pornography for the first time, and it was on a computer in my room. We had dial of internet, right? You know, if you remember that.
Oh, it's so me at 8.
Yeah. Channel. My parents had no idea that even existed, right? So I give them grace in that. Like, it was ignorance. They had no idea that I had access to such things. Well, now we know. Like, we know what is online. We know what this is doing to us. We know how it's affecting our kids. So why do we keep doing it? And I don't, like I said, I don't want parents to just live in fear. I know for so many families, like, it's always a fight, right? It's always a fight with their kids over technology and too much time on their phone. And social media is causing all kinds of social issues and drama with their friends. And we don't want our kids to live in a bubble where it's like you can't, engage with the world at all. We want to teach them to do it correctly. And so, Where should a parent get started on evaluating and trying to do this well and understanding what technology is your kid able to use right now? Like, what is appropriate level? And I think if we honestly evaluated that, it would be probably much less than most kids are using right now.
Yeah, I think it would be. I think just what you said, being eyes open about what's happening is our first and foremost. There are still some parents who are like, no, like, we live through it, they will too. And just recognize that it's a different world. I mean, yes, we grew up in the world of 28.8 internet that shouted to people when we were getting online, right? The like, there was no way to make a quiet mistake at 2 a.m. In a public space that way. Whereas now, it's just on a device, and it may not be your device. I was just talking to a Christian school yesterday where they're having sixth graders pull up pornography at school. And this is in classrooms. Now you have a kid who made a mistake that impacts all the kids. Like, I never once pulled up pornography at school. Like, that would have been wild to me. I'd never seen pornography at school. Even kids who regularly did it on purpose were not pulling, because they had no way of getting it to you.
Yeah.
And I think even just the idea, like the social concept that would be a fun, like that would be funny or a joke, like that wasn't present. Like that wasn't part of the culture. Now it is. So understand first what we're talking about. We're talking about a world that has the internet that is not like adult version and kid version internets. It is just the internet and all of the content is out there for whomever might be there. And some of the internet is specifically trying to find your child. So that is real. I'm not saying that to scare you. I'm saying that anything other than that would be ignorant as a parenting premise. Then we have to, I guess, go two directions. We have to, we understand that there's two kinds of tech. There's tool that helps us create, drool that helps us consume. Tool is going to support your goals. Drool is going to give you goals. So knowing that is our next step. This is why some parents are like, oh, but my kid loves Legos and organizing and engineering and we're big into programs. Especially here in the Northwest, I talk to lots of families from, you know, the giant tech companies, Amazon and Google and Meta. And we have a lot of very bright minds, Microsoft, who are coming in and saying, yeah, but like, this is what I do for a living. So look at their child, something like a Minecraft. They'll say, well, this is really good. Minecraft movie just came out. It's a huge deal. Like, that's great. Like, it could be very lovely, but please don't try to convince yourself that it's like Legos, because it's not. Like, no child has ever been overstimulated playing Legos. Lots of kids get overstimulated playing Minecraft. And part of it is the number of goals. Part of it is how fast you can accomplish something. Part of it is just the limitless nature. Like, you run out of blocks at some point using Legos. You never run out of blocks in Minecraft. The scale, it's massive, so there's always another thing. But the game is also giving you little quests and giving you little goals and giving you little incentives. And there's inquiry built in and discovery and creativity, and that's wonderful. And, like, there's a limit to how long you could do that and be healthy. I would say more kids are getting overstimulated than they're getting funneled into the world of 3D design and CAD drawings. If you want your child to,
so what is the goal here and what's the best way to accomplish that goal? So if you want your child to be creative and grow on those skills, look at the results. Are the kids who are on Minecraft all the time ending up like with this great career in engineering with a healthy family? Or the kids who have Legos and stuff at home where they're being creative, using their imaginations, are they more likely to achieve those goals? And I think that the data is pretty clear there.
Well, so the data gets tricky because you start going through, all right, let's take a survey of all Microsoft employees. How many of you grew up playing Minecraft? Well, you're going to get a ton of them. So what we do then with this conversation is say, all right, we recognize that Minecraft is different than Legos. It is tech with retention in mind. That is why Microsoft paid $4 billion for him. What then I want to do next is talk about how do we fight for our kid. I want your kid to play Minecraft if it's good for them. But how do we know? I have an acronym called a RESET. R-E-S-E-T stands for relationships, emotions, sleep, enjoyment, time. Mm. If you can say that it improves those five areas or even one or two of those areas, great. But if it impedes one or more areas, now we have a question. So relationships, that's with your family and with friends. So when you play this game, are you a better sibling or a worse one, right? Do you do a better job responding to mom or dad, or do you do worse? Is it always a fight when we tell you relationally, right? Or it could be, let's take it out of Minecraft. If you go and use social media, do you have more drama with your friends when you're on social media? That's a way we can go then to our child and say, hey, I've noticed. When you're on this app, you fight more with your friends. Do you see that, right? This is now a conversation that allows your child feedback. Insight. There's still parenting involved because you still have to make a final call. It is within your realm of loving parenting to say, this is hurting you, or this is hurting us as a people. I'm removing it. I'm not mad at you. This isn't some kind of character building exercise where like, I'm just going to make you suffer and you're going to do it the hard way because that was my childhood. But to say, hey, this is detrimental, and really pointing them back to the promises in Luke where Jesus says, your heavenly Father knows how to give a good gift. And you do too. Like if your child asks for an egg, you don't give them a scorpion. And so many of us with smartphones, with the internet, with video games, social media, have given our kids something that's self-destructive to their relationships, then to their emotions. Like, can you be okay without this thing, or are you using this to medicate? The short version of my testimony is I played video games to be okay. Well into adulthood, I married, master's degree, career as a teacher, and realized, oh, I'm processing all my emotions through video games. If I have a fight with my wife, I play video games. When a friend passes away, I play video games. When I have a summer break and it's like the best time of my life, I play video games. When I hang out with all my closest friends, we play video games. Like
everything comes back to video games and is filtered through them. And I don't know how to deal with real life. Like that, my emotional part of my reset was failing. And the Lord is very gracious to convict me of that and then to bring me into freedom so that for me, it was a full removal. Like I just don't play games anymore. Video games, board games, hard to be overstimulated or overplay. That's a board game. But
not impossible.
I don't know. I've been pretty steadily really playing Settlers of Catan. That's like my game.
Settlers is great. And the first person to 8 points never wins because we're just like, we'll never trade with you again.
It's still rage quitting too in board games.
But relationships and responsibilities, emotions, and then sleep.
Basically, if you have drool tech in the bedroom, if your kid has a smart TV, if they've got a video game console, if they have a one-to-one device from school, their laptop that they're doing work on, if that thing is in their bedroom at night, it's exposing them to unnecessary amounts of risk. Basically, we have a bunch of research that says drool tech in the bedroom is a bad idea.
And we have no research that says, yes, entertainment technology helps your teen sleep better. And sleep is foundational to every part of their life. So sleep, enjoyment, not just do we like the tech, but again, does it take so much enjoyment that everything else wilts? So your child used to have diverse interests, and now this one interest is the only thing. It's the one interest to rule them all. And while they might be able to make a career of that, I had a parent with this the other day, yeah, but my kid is an amazing coder and just is so good at all of this. I mean, look at how he's circumnavigating our family safety network. Like, right. So, like, this is the whole, like, hacking at any system. Like, don't gain the world to lose your soul, though. Like, don't be the world's best hacker and be completely subservient to what technology has trained you to need and to believe lies about your identity and what's given you purpose. Like, please be a professional gamer, but be one who can be healthy. And if you can't be healthy and be a professional gamer, then that just became expendable because you're not. And, like, that conversation lets you fight, again, for your child. Yes, there's a conflict involved. Yes, there's hard decisions and hard conversations happening, but they're purposeful. Because the point isn't, well, is technology bad? The point is, well, are you good? Like, if you're good, this is like, this is awesome. And the last one is time. Can we be content? Again, I mentioned Duolingo. It can be a simple thing. It could be a video game. It could be a training app. But the goal is always healthy reset. Because once we do that, that leaves us the space for safe, ready, and good. Safest technology, like out of the box, if you weren't going to amend it at all, will be tool tech. It will come with accountability baked into it. It will not have an app store and it will not have a web browser. So that's our safest of the safe. So something like a Gab phone. I have been told actually Gab just released a new iOS, or not iOS, a new operating system where they do have a browser that's like parental control from the app side. So hear me out on this, but the basic version of a Gab phone is no public app store. It does have one now. It uses Google Play, but you can lock it down. So there's no app store. There's no browser. You can't send or receive pictures, but you can take them locally. And you can make phone calls. You can use basic GPS and you can be a little blue dot so mom and dad can see where you are. But like that's basic level technology. It just lets you do what you need it to do. All this.
Because we want to be realistic. There's in our world, it's like, gosh, like I can't go anywhere without my GPS.
Right.
It's like, you don't have maps in our car.
Right.
Yeah. And so many basic everyday things, like that's how you find out information. That's your source of information. We can't just live in the 1800s again and not have any technology,
right,
but do it at an appropriate level. And I think one of the excuses, and I want to give parents a lot of grace. It is so hard. It's like I have so many things for you with parenting and I'm constantly humbled by it. But one of the excuses I hear is like, well, I trust my kids.
Yeah.
And it's like, we want to trust our kids, but so much of what they come into online and run across is by accident, right? Like so many kids who accidentally came across pornography, and I've seen the devastation that does in their hearts, and we need to protect them from that. It's like, yeah, even at like, you know, you want to trust them and they might, like, sometimes we put too much trust in them. It's like they're a sinner, right? And they're enticed by things.
And they don't have the hardware to resist.
Yes, they don't have the maturity to resist. I'm an adult and I have a hard time having maturity to resist, right? Like we all need accountability. Like we can all succumb to temptation, sin, and we come across something by accident and that just grabs a hold of our heart. It entices us. It captures us.
Yeah, and I think two parts of that. First would be, I do have an iPhone. It is the world's dumbest iPhone, to the point where when we talk about safe tech, I've done everything that I need to make that phone as safe as possible. Again, I have four sisters, and they have all told me, you may not show up in the family chat as a green box. Like, you have to be blue, because the rest of the family's blue, and we're sharing pictures of grandbabies. I'm like, everyone needs to be on the same page. So
I saw once a meme a while back. It's like, you're hurting your family by being the only Android user.
I'm legitimately angry at me. So I have it, but a couple things I've done is, one, I had a friend set parental controls for me, like just a buddy who knows my journey with technology. And like, hey, would you remove my app store? So I don't have the code. I have all the apps I need. I travel around the country with this phone, and it allows me to stay connected. It allows me to have maps to make sure I show up at the right place at the right time, run my calendar. I don't have my email on my phone because I'm also ADD and I love something to distract me. Yeah. So I don't use email on my phone. I don't have any social media. I use it for my job, and it's not on my phone. It's just on my work laptop. My only browser has Cameron Eyes in it. And so Cameron Eyes allows two other people who care about me to see what I'm doing. So like, I have, as an adult, decided I really like making good choices, and I want technology that helps me do that. And so when we talk about what tech do we give our kids, like safe, so it's going to be as tool techy as we take mitigated risks, certainly. But like, as you know, you're reasonable for it. The idea is not when you turn 18, you're going to get unmitigated freedom on the internet. I love that Tim Keller point where he says, like, freedom isn't the ability to make every decision you want. The freedom is to make the decisions God has for you. And the example he uses is a fish. Like, a fish isn't more free because it's on dry land. Like, a fish is most free within specific confines of where life is fullest for that fish, away from predators, in the water, in a climate that's appropriate for that fish, freshwater or saltwater or whatever that might be. And that's true for us too. As followers of Christ, like, there are actually healthy limitations and boundaries we put around for freedom. I want freedom, so I put boundaries on my phone because that allows me freedom. I don't have to make the right choice all the time. Sometimes it's just made for me, and it's really freeing to now use my bandwidth to invest in something else. I don't even, not even like pornography decision, just YouTube. I don't have it on my phone because it's so distracting. And so allowing ourselves to pick the right tech, the safest tech possible for our kids. And you brought up, but are they ready for it? Like, I just want them to have it because I can trust them. Maybe. Like, when I see a 13-year-old with a smartphone, I assume the parents have said, hey, this tech is safe enough for you because you've shown us you're ready. You have been faithful in little things, and now you can be faithful in big things. I would go to that reset first and foremost, and that parent said, 13-year-old, your relationships are healthy. Your emotions are well-tempered. Your sleep is solid. Your enjoyment is diverse and deep, and your time is measured and intentional. Cool. Like, that kid has a healthy reset. Go on, start building that adult skill of using a smartphone. Just keep in mind, no frontal cortex. Keep in mind, not even normals on what a friend is. That's generally through 14 as a child is building the concept of what does it mean to be a friend. And now you're adding social media. If they have a smartphone, they definitely have a social media. That you're adding free access to just the World Wide Web and all of the people on it. Like, there are some concerns there, but that's what I'm assuming because I see it. If that were not the case, you go, oh, we've decided this is safe enough, but you're not ready. You haven't shown us faithfulness. And this is where the prodigal situation comes in. I always get parents who go, yeah, all right. So I have a 13-year-old, 15-year-old, 17-year-old who says, hey, I'm going to be 18 and I'm going to do this on my own. So you might as well just give it to me now and just let me start learning my mistakes as an adult. And I would say two things. First, don't deal with terrorists. It's just because this child is threatening you with mistakes doesn't mean they'll actually make that. Think of the number of things you said you were going to do when you were in middle school that you didn't do when you were an adult. Think of the number of times you prayed that God would, you know, let you marry this person you're dating, and then it falls through. And that's the, you know, very Garth Brooksy, but the best unanswered prayer. There are these things where life is going to change, and your child might turn 18 and go, oh, I actually have different goals now that doesn't support it. But then there's a chance they're not going to change, and they mean this. And you don't need to get them a head start at self-destruction. But yeah, the most lovely thing you
are still their parent. You're in control. And I don't want parents to do that belligerently. It's like, no, you do it with love and compassion as you shepherd your child's heart, and they understand the reasons why.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't just be the angry, get off my lawn type person.
Right.
But you actually shepherd and disciple them in what is appropriate for them and why you're making these decisions and navigate it with them.
Yes. And you can always, you are not hanging it over their head if they've made a mistake that they're unrepentant for. You are reminding them of the decision that they have proven that this is not an egg. This is a scorpion. For some children, maybe this would be a good choice, but it's not a good choice for you. I had a young man and who was complaining about his mom being the worst. And I went and talked to mom because he was like, oh, my mom will never let me have a smartphone. And mom was like, oh, no, we did it last year. And he committed a felony.
Oh, wow.
As a minor. And I went back to him. And he's like, yeah, well, like that was a year ago and I just need a phone now. And eventually mom got to the point where in this conversation, she's like, you could use the apps you want to use, but you have to use them on my device until, you know, we can trust you to be safe. And his response was, I would rather not have it. And she's like, well, that can be arranged, right?
Yeah, I was like, that's not right. Done deal.
Because you're not repentant. You're not trying to make good choices. You're not asking to be trusted. You're just demanding to be allowed to make the decisions you want to make that are self-destructive on your own terms. And your parents don't hate you. And so I think that's a beautiful way for us to do it in hope, to say, like, I'm going to give you all the tech that makes you look more like Jesus. I'm going to give you all the tech that I can see bring life and light into you. And I'm going to avoid the tech that's damaging, especially tech that you don't care or don't see that it's harmful, because that's even harder for you to mitigate. It's even harder for you to inhibit. So when we're talking about our kids, is it safe? Are they ready? And then is the fruit good? We, as a family, have made decisions with tech where our child comes, and this ties into the, but won't they rebel if we never give them tech? That's where we're headed with this. A child of mine came and said, Dad, can I buy this tech? I said, yes, you can save up for it. It was like $85. For a young child, that's an insane amount of money. Saved it up, Christmas, birthday, chores, doing all the things, sold a couple things, bought the tech. And by the day, like two, three, and I looked at each other like, oh, this was a mistake. The tech is not bad. Our child is certainly responsible enough, but something about the mix of this tech and this child is a horrific combo. The reset was completely kaput. Time management was out the window. Sleep was sneaking it late at night, sneaking it early in the morning. Emotions were all kind of cattywampus, regulating with the tech rather than regulating with individual initiative of like, if I don't get this thing, the wheels are going to come off our family because I'm going to burn this place to the ground. And so by day like four, I had to go and I drew the short straw and I said, hey, I'm going to buy that back from you. So here's your money. I then went and guilt purchased. This isn't like parenting advice, but I felt so terrible because I was so proud of like, you worked so hard for it. Worked so hard for it. And like, I recognized the weight. And we all remember that time, like we bought that first thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just guilt spent and bought so many Legos. And that was like our, it might've been more for me than for him. But as like did this process of removing it, and it was not pretty. It was not fun. My child was very upset about that process. And it was months of like coming back, like, hey, do you understand why we did that?
The conversation, that's shepherding. That's what everyone's ultimate goal as parents is, shepherding their hearts.
And it's more important than getting it right the first time. Like, I just want to emphasize that so many parents can hear this conversation about tech and go, well, Nathan, I don't know, Sandra Brady knows how to do this. Or like, maybe if I was more of this, but I've already done that. But point is, you love your kid. And if you see that it's self-destructive, the fruit is bad. I like to use Galatians 5, 19 through 21, where there's a whole list of bad fruit, including lust and envy and dissension and fits of rage, where there are either apps, programs, games, or devices built around accentuating that one bad fruit. Like Instagram is built around envy. No one enjoys their life more after being on Instagram. That's the goal of it. In fact, there was a 2019 study that was released in 2021 by Wall Street Journal, internal study from Meta, that they said, we know that one in three girls feel worse about their bodies, teenage girls, feel worse about their bodies after using our app. We know that. And it's functional for how we build our design. Like, we're not built to make people content. We're built to make them envious. So if we know that, we can remove it.
We have a world that is out to get your kids, not to be alarmist, but that's their jobs. That's what they're doing. Is like, you as the parent are the one protector, right, with the help of God. And we might have to backtrack on some things and realize that, oh, we made this decision, but that wasn't a good idea. We're going to walk back on that. We're going to set some stronger boundaries. It's going to be hard. We're going to love our kids through it and pray for God's favor and good fruit, and that God will honor what we're doing to protect our kids.
Yeah. And that is really the main thing, is to keep prayer as the first piece that we're going to be praying for our kids, not just about them, not Lord fix them, but praying for them. Truly, the spiritual blessings, we were blessed with grandparents, Ann and I, who were prayer warriors. There's some grandparents probably listening to this. I regularly run into grandparents stuff, but I don't understand tech. I don't use it. I don't have a smartphone. I don't understand this. You're prayer warriors. You're modeling how to pray well, but you're also interceding in a spiritual battle that is for your child's minds and hearts or your grandchildren's minds and hearts. Use all your days for that, please. Because when our grandparents passed, we lost. Like, we were losing three massive, all in their 90s, and we found prayer journals that were like, Dear Jesus, thank you for my grand. I mean, day after we are day.
It's amazing. Prayers.
I'm going before the throne room of God and interceding for us. And we are so grateful for that. So pray. Then be present relationally. Make space for those conversations. No amount of rules make your kid good. So keep this in mind. We're showing this biblically because if rules were good enough to make us good before the Lord, we wouldn't need a New Testament. The Old Testament is really good rules and no ability to follow it. It just shows us our desperate need. And the Lord was saving by grace in the Old Testament, as Hebrews reminds us, and still saves by grace. So we go to our children in grace and humility relationally, and we are being relationally in conversation. We're being relational with our time, and we're being relational with our presence. So yeah, I travel a lot for work. I do miss stuff. And trying to build in those intentional times. Ann and I were just, and it can be simple. Like, some of us read that book, Intentional Father, and like, it's amazing.
So I just got that this week.
It's awesome.
I've been hearing it from everywhere. Always.
It's great, but also like, okay, like it's intense. Like, you'll come away being like, and I shouldn't even start because
it's too much. It's like, yeah, I can't do this.
Literally traveling the world with his only son and like, you know, doing these awesome man adventures and coming of age things with like the adult dad's four best friends and his four kids, and it's, you know, six straight days in the, and you're like, this was just trip one of like nine, like this is amazing but like overwhelming, and I want to quit. What Anna has challenged me, my wife challenged me to just tack it on to what we're already doing. So I drop one son off at baseball and I take the other son out for donuts. And we'll pick up donuts for the team and then we'll stay for 15 minutes and eat Henry. My 9-year-old got a bear claw and I got an apple fritter. Right. And like,
perfect.
We just sit and eat at the slightly sticky table at the local donut shop. And like, it's 15 minutes, just the two of us.
Those moments where you're developing rhythms of investing in each child, some family discipleship time,
yeah.
Individual discipleship time, being intentional.
And just a kiss. And then just, I mean, I don't want to say habit stacking, but atomic habits, like the idea of like, yeah, like tack it in with what you're already doing. It doesn't have to be this huge glamorous going to look good on Instagram thing.
Yes.
I took a picture, but I'm not going to post it. Like, it's just a thing for us. And then the other son was, all right, everyone's at home. Practice ends at 7:30 for baseball. Let's go to Burger King and I'll pay $9 and you can get a burger and a soda. And that'll be 25 minutes of us just sitting and talking together. Like, when we're talking being present relationally, it doesn't have to be, you know, knee-to-knee, nose-to-nose, like deep, intensive talks. It can be intentional time, little drips around the birds and the bees does a great job talking at us. Those little parental relational conversations, because the rules build on that. Kids are going to trust you. They're going to see what you do. They're going to listen to what you say, but always look what you do. And being present for that is so, so important, because the last one is you're going to be present with boundaries. You're going to lovingly set boundaries. And so with our family, and we have boundaries around the kinds of tech we can have in the house, it certainly can start to sound like conspiracy theory, like, no, that tech is the worst. And so I have to be very intentional because I have strong thoughts and opinions and research and experience. So I have to be very intentional. And I'm like, this isn't bad. The question is like, is it good?
Yes.
I have yet, there's certain tech that my kids really want to use. Then I'm like, show me a kid that I want you to be more like. Or the question that Anna asks is, show me a time in your day where you should be doing that instead of what you're already doing. Like, in a 24-hour day, you're full. Like, you use your time. You love what you do. You're creative and you're energized and you're spontaneous and it's beautiful and joyous and incredible. Show me which part of that 24-hour day should be replaced by an hour of this other activity you want. And like, we'll talk about it, but like, we don't see a deficit.
You have to make a case for that.
Yeah.
Let's see, how is this going to benefit? What's the cost? What's the benefit?
Right. And I think that's really what we're trying to do is help them see that. Because I'm getting, then this comes to the, but what if we don't raise them around a question? Right. I teased way too long ago. We are not seeing 22-year-olds graduate college or leave the home and find a phone. 22-year-olds who were raised with minimal tech at home. find a phone laying around and going on a bender and waking up with, you know, an Apple logo tattooed on their lower back. We're not seeing that happen. What we're seeing is 22-year-olds who are going, wait a minute, this phone that I'm holding actually comes with its own prerogative. It comes with its own goals, and it's distracting me from the life goals that I have. So I'm going to walk away. And we're seeing the 20-somethings go to dumber devices. We're seeing the upper 20-somethings be the most intense tech parrots you've ever seen. Those kids we talked about that were raised with the first iPhones,
yes,
and we just tossed them and like, well, here you go. And it was a season of ignorance. We were really optimistic on how well it could use. Teachers were, we were like, this is going to be so great. We're going to get smartphones in the classroom, and it's going to change how we can reach every single kid. And it did, but not for the better. So those parents are being really intense. Those young people are being really intentional, to the point where I had a young man in his early 20s the other day say, I deleted all social media off my phone. I thought I knew why. So I asked, I said, why? He goes, because I don't know how to tell the story. And I was like, oh, that's not awesome. That's not the answer I expected. Like, what do you mean? And he's like, I've spent so much time living in other people's lives. I don't know how to live in my own. And I think that is what we want our young people to recognize. Where we're seeing the backlash is if you have a young person who is responsible, a young person who is asking for technology, and a young person who is trustworthy, producing good fruit, who said, hey, I really want this opportunity. We find a way to say yes. So my kid, who fits most of that, has asked for a smartphone. I go, okay, you're reasonable and responsible and an amazing young person. And a smartphone is absolutely a viper right now, like an appropriate age to give that to you at the age of 11.
Yes.
But I'll tell you what we can do. Like, I'll put my phone on guided access. You can use Duolingo. You can. He came to me and asked for a program called Scratch. Scratch is a coding program made by MIT. Like, you know what? I didn't pick it. I've looked at it. It seems appropriate. You've got a couple buddies at school that are doing it. You can do that. Like, I will let you code. And he's coding actually like a copycat by a guy named Griff Patch of Legend of Zelda Link to the Past. Like, he's coding that game. Like, how do you make a sprite move? How do you build a map? How do you build buildings? Like, super cool. It's video game adjacent. It certainly gives him an appetite for some of those things that I think are cool for my childhood that I can't participate anymore. But the fruit is still good. And it's meeting him where he's at. It's allowing him some of that independence that's age appropriate with technology that is a reasonable amount of safety. Mm-hmm. For safe.
Wow. Yes.
Reasonably safe.
Now it's helping him unfettered access to things that.
Right. And harmful. I would say in the next couple years, he'll be in sixth grade, then going into seventh. He's entering some more intense sports stages. Like, he's going to get some version of a dumb phone soon. Currently, we have a lockdown MacBook Pro so they can like watch a show, but it only allows one website. I'm locked in at a certain age group. So like, you can use this laptop. We don't have a TV. You can use this laptop and this phone, which is locked into guided access for the actual calling mechanism. So like, these are the two devices we're going to leave home right now. So that we can practice like going on a walk and then coming back 30 minutes later and making sure you're still alive. But that idea is building in some of that independence so that when you get your own device, you know how to use it well. You have that baseline of healthy use. And parents, again, the goal is not never make a mistake or have high enough walls that no mistakes can happen to your child. The goal is open relationship, clear communication of hyper standards, and eyes on Jesus, that the true identifier of our value and worth and purpose is Christ, who saved us from our sins for freedom within the bounds of what that means to be a Christ follower, following the rules of God. We now can actually do that. We're not Romans 7, we're Romans 8. And there's no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. And then for purpose, that we've been saved for good works that God prepared beforehand for us to do. And that's what we want our children to do. The good works God prepared for them to do. So the short version of that is use the best tech well, or use all the tech that makes you look like Jesus. But
that's what that conversation is.
Ultimately, we should have a kingdom eternal mindset. It's like, what's actually helping us accomplish God's purposes and producing good fruit? That is a great vision for how we use technology, and very convicting for me too.
Yeah. And I let me say just one more thing on that, because you can use the drool tech on that. It is possible for like, my kids have played Mario Kart with friends, right? And that's a blast. They love it. That's drool tech. It's a video game. It's meant for retention, but it's appropriate for our family. It fits with where they're ready, and they will play the game and then go off into life. They'll watch The Wildcrafts, Chris and Martin Kratt, show streamed on Amazon about two brothers that go around and discover superpowers of animals. It's a 20-ish minute PBS show. They'll watch it and spend an hour outside flipping rocks. They'll watch a 20-minute Dude Perfect Overtime about five guys doing trick shots and spend hours trying to do their own trick shots, or getting their cousins to do trick shots, or their friends to do, like, it gets them inspired to go out into life rather than draws them out of real life more into the what the ecosphere of that tech is. So that's just another litmus we can use with talking to our kids, is if it brings more life, awe, and joy. Really, if it creates more love, joy, and self-control, if we're looking at Galatians 5:22. So
that's a great vision.
Yeah, and I'm so excited that you're having this conversation with parents, and my prayer is that in talking with them about this, that they'll feel equipped to parent their kids where they're at and acknowledge mistakes that have been made or are being made.
There's no perfect parent. God doesn't expect perfect parents. He wants repentant parents. And so we learn and we grow along the process.
Like I am, and I'm sure I'll have more mistakes to share with you all in the future.
Yes, you can come back again, and sure, we'd love to hear some stories.
Yeah.
So, Nathan, I want to end with, how can people connect with you? What's your website? What are the resources you have available? How can people find out more?
Website's gospeltech.net. So you can go there. You'll learn more about our ministry and our self.
We'll leave that in the show notes,
right? There's a podcast, Gospel Tech, with Nathan Sutherland, which is just weekly conversations on raising healthy youth in a tech world. And then Anna and I both wrote books. So Gospel Center Tech is anywhere.
You can find those on Amazon, everywhere.
Amazon, gospelcentertech.net. And then Anna's is the Graceful Disconnect, which is the 25-day devotion on tech.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We could sit here and talk all day. We already had so much talking before we started recording. And now we're going to go and have lunch. And so, so thank you so much. Hopefully we can have more of these conversations at some point. It's an overwhelming world for parents out there. And I just want to end with a minute of prayer. So let's just pray. Lord, thank you so much for Nathan, what he's doing. I thank you for every parent who's listening. I pray that they would rest in your grace. We don't want them to feel overwhelmed or condemnation. We want them to be encouraged, convicted, inspired, empowered. Help them see that there's no condemnation for those who are in Christ. I pray for parents who feel like it's too late. I've already given our kids technology that we shared it. I pray that they would just see that they can model repentance to their kids. I pray for soft hearts for them and their kids. I pray for strong boundaries. I pray for them to see the joy and the peace and the fruit that happens when we just take steps of obedience. And so for parents listening today, I pray that they understand what is their next step of obedience to you in producing healthy kids, and help them take that step, whether their child is one or their child is 10 or 20 or out of the house. If anything, I pray that they would drop to their knees in prayer and be a prayer warrior for their adult kids and their grandkids. Pray for these things in your name. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Calibrate Conversations. Make sure you go to calibrateconversations.com, calibrateministries.com, and find some more resources. Connect with me if there's anything I can do for you. Thank you.